Hello, and welcome again to Radio Book Club on Radio Free Palmer. This is Judy Getty, and I'll be hosting the show today as we discuss children's and young adult books. My guests are Katie Schweissall, the Library Services Coordinator at Palmer Public Library. Katie and I wanted to talk about young reader and young adult books as we head into summer vacation for school kids. We've picked several books to talk about, and we hope our readers will call in and share some of their favorite books. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you, Judy. Thanks for having me today. I'm excited to be here and discuss some new books and share a little bit about our summer reading program.
So can you tell me a little bit about the summer reading program, the plan for this year?
Yes, thank you. Our theme revolves around science this year, and we have programs put together for people as young as babies and on up until you can imagine. And so we have ongoing programs this year for our preschoolers. We have Baby Lap Sit and Story Time. Our programming for K through 5 will look pretty similar to last year. Thursday's our special day for kids in grades K through 5. And then we opened up our teen programming to youth. So that'll include some kids from our middle school age ranges. And our teens and our adults will enjoy a different program this year. They will be experiencing a virtual scavenger hunt around the library this summer.
And so when is the sign up for that?
We begin registration on June 2nd. So Monday, June 2nd, we open registration. Registration closes July 18th. And we end our summer reading program with a party on July 24th.
Okay. I always sign up my kids for that or my grandchildren, so I'm glad it's going on again this year.
Good. We're excited to see you.
My other guest is 12-year-old Callum Larson, and Callum is a self-professed avid reader. Welcome, Callum.
Thanks for having me.
So, Callum, what did you do in preparation for being on the show with us today?
I read 14 books from the Roald Dahl Fizz Whizzing collection, and in alphabetical order, they are The BFG, Boy, Tales of Childhood, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Danny, the Champion of the World, Ezio Trot, Fantastic Mr. Fox, George's Marvelous Medicine, Going Solo, The Giraffe and the Pelly and Me, James and the Giant Peach, The Magic Finger, Matilda, The Twits, and The Witches.
Well, I'm impressed because I managed to get through 5 books for this show, and I know Katie mentioned that she got through 3 and a little bit of the other 2. So good job, Callum. You certainly are an avid reader. So we're going to get to some of your books, too. As I mentioned, Katie and I selected 5 books that we're going to talk about. So we invite listeners to call in at 745-8900 in order to share in the conversation about reading for young people. So, Katie, let's start talking about Aesop's Secret. This was one of the books you picked, and it was by Claudia White. So how did you hear about this book, or what kind of grabbed that one for you?
It is. Actually, the very first thing I noticed about the book was the cover. I couldn't ignore the girl on the cover and kind of her blank stare she's giving. And also with Aesop, I was intrigued instantly. So I wanted to know what it was about. What I really liked about the book was its appeal, I think, both to boys and girls. That's something... It seems in younger children's literature that books seem a lot of oftentimes to be geared towards either girls or boys, but this seemed to suit both. And I also, I liked the story. I liked that there was a strong heroine in it and also a good message. I thought it was a really fun book to read.
And that's one of the things I wanted to talk about. And Callum, you can pipe in here too, this idea that some books are written maybe more directly for boys or for girls, and it is hard to find a book that might appeal to both.
It is, and in our search to do so, we end up filling our library shelves really quickly, and so we've started looking a lot towards books that that are interesting to everybody. And I think what's really nice about this book as well is not only the appeal to both boys and girls, but to adults as well. I found it very entertaining and engaging as an adult reading it, and really enjoyed the story.
What, Callum, you want to add anything about that? Do you find
No.
any... You don't. Do you find that you read books that maybe are for boys and girls, or what do you observe?
Yeah, I do. I read books that are both for boys and girls.
Okay, and do you think that many of the Roald Dahl books that you read girls would like them also?
Yeah, girls would like Roald Dahl books also, especially Matilda, since it has a feminine hero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. I like that story too. I've read that one. So in Aesop's Secret, Melinda, who's the female hero, as you said, the main character, she and her family are Athenites, which they're able to turn into animals. So the book has a little bit of a fantastical or magical quality to it. And, you know, one of the things you mentioned was about a good message. So part of that story then is about being different. And certainly with kids, they're constantly measuring themselves against other kids and checking, am I the same or am I different? Or, you know, am I normal? Do I fit in? So do you think that book helps that conversation?
I do think it does. One of the messages I did appreciate that I gathered from the book was that we are all different and it's okay. And it's, in a way, it's our differences can be a commonality as well, because we all have our differences and it's a way to bring us together and to share our strengths and become stronger. And I liked that message that, yes, everyone is different, but at the same time, it can kind of bring us together.
It's like that old saying, we're all unique.
Yeah.
In our own special way, right?
Yeah.
And the other note I put on here was that the bad guys were believable.
Yeah.
You know, that there is this group of the, you know, the villains, so to speak, that wanted to capture the Athenites and of course, you know, do unfortunate things to them. But while there's fantastical and magical elements to the book, it's believable, too. I mean, you can suspend your disbelief and engage.
It's true, and I really like that. For young readers to be able to have the sense of characters you can connect to kind of in this fantastic setting. And this book does a good job with that, where it's very easy to relate to the characters, but they face some really unique challenges. And I think that makes for a good read.
Callum, some of the Roald Dahl books also have sense of magic in them. True?
Yeah.
Can you talk about any of the book, any witch book that might have magic in it?
In The Witches, in that book, There's this group of witches that they hate kids very much, and they wish to do very bad things to them. And they can transform into different things. They could turn kids into mice. They could do a lot of other stuff.
Okay. So again, I think, you know, having magic in books is something that kids are interested in, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So one of the other messages I thought that this book portrayed pretty well was that people tend to see what they expect or believe is possible to see. So, and again, I think that in children's books, and especially younger children's books, there's oftentimes magic because, of course, kids at a certain age still believe in magic and believe in the impossible happening. And I think, you know, what the author, Claudia White, is saying here is that once we get to an age where we no longer accept that view of the world, we'll ignore or we simply don't even see magical things. So in the book, when some of the characters are turning into animals, people just don't possibly see it.
It's true, and I really liked how the author used magic and the appeal that children have for animals to kind of hook them in and share the theme of all of us being different yet having something to contribute. I thought it was a great job on her behalf, and also kind of makes you maybe look at animals a little differently. Maybe if you have a rabbit at home, wondering what your rabbit might be up to or what your rabbit's thinking as well.
Mm-hmm. So as I was reading this book, I happened to be reading another book with some Alaska authors in it. And there was an essay by Beth Leonard. And she was discussing long ago narratives of the Athabascan people. And so this is a quote from the essay. Koyukun beliefs stress that in the distant past, there was a time in the transition world when transformation of creatures was possible and all had transhuman aspects. Bear, wolf, wolverine, lynx had two souls like contemporary man and could change from one form to another. And so I just thought, well, you know, that was kind of interesting that I would read that at the same time as the book, because that was kind of the idea of the mother, Melinda's mother, was doing this research about folk stories and this idea that human beings could turn into animals.
Yeah. That's great. That's a really fun connection you were able to make.
Yes, and so even in our Alaska Native culture, we have those stories. Callum, in any of your books, do people turn into animals because they want to?
No.
Okay. Just in The Witches, they can turn people into mice, but
yeah.
It's not that they want to be turned into mice.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So just a reminder, you're listening to Radio Book Club on Radio Free Palmer. Please call us at 745-8900 if you'd like to comment on any of the books we read or if you've got a suggestion of a book and why you think it's a good book for a young person to read. So, Callum, we were just talking about Aesop's Secret. Do you think that's a book that might interest you?
Yeah, it sounds interesting. I like the point of how they're shapeshifters.
Okay, and that is another term that's used for that, right? And people that can turn into animals. So, okay. So a book that I picked, and Katie did not get all the way through it, I guess, but it was called Island of Thieves by Josh Lacey. And now you recognize the list where I got this from.
I did. It's a YALSA website, Young American Literature Association, something along those lines.
Okay.
And they do a great job. Their goal is to provide a format that's easy to access for young readers to just get books that they like. It's supposed to take a lot of the fuss out of selecting a title.
So as Katie and I were doing our research, we were finding that there are a lot of sources for picking books, and some of them probably more reputable than others. And there is just a plethora of books out there for young readers. And so the difficulty can be, you know, finding a good one or matching your young reader with a topic. And we can appreciate how difficult that is. Do you have any suggestions for people on helping them?
I do. Through our library website, www.cityofpalmer.org/library, we have an electronic resource center. And one of the links there, it's called Novel List, NovelList. And you can search a few different ways for various reading material. But what I like is they'll, first of all, just give you a review of what other readers had to say. And so you can gauge some things there. But there's feedback regarding the genre, the author, the theme. What I also like is there's a link on there that you can choose read-alikes. So it'll give you titles of books that have a similar theme or a similar author. And then also author-alikes, and so authors who write similar sorts of stories as well. And I like it because it already starts with something you're interested in and gives you more things that are similar that you might not have found yourself. And so Novelist doesn't only do that, but it's one of the really great features. We also use it a lot because people say, I really like this book, I don't know the next one, or I don't know the first book in the series. And off the top of our heads, as a librarian, we don't always know either, but we use Novelist a lot because it'll give you this series and what might be coming out next and what to look for. So it's been very helpful.
And that's similar to, like, if you shop on Amazon or anything, it says people who bought this also bought the other suggestions. So it's amazing what the computer does as far as analyze our likes and similarities. And
it does. It's really convenient also that it's online. When you're on the library website, you're also able to access the library card catalog, so you can put it on hold or search for it, or if we don't have it, suggest that we purchase it. And so I think it's a really user-friendly way to get a hold of some things you might be interested in.
So this book I did find on that YALSA list that you mentioned, and one of the other conversations Katie and I had before we were picking books, or while we were picking them, was that so many books seem to be dark for this age group. And so we really worked at trying to find some books that maybe were adventuresome, but not quite as heavy or as dark. And so when I looked at Island of Thieves, I guess what attracted me to it was that it was an adventure story. And this one does have a boy who's 12 years old who is the main character, the hero of the story. And so I guess I would say that this one may be more directed at boys.
I would definitely agree with that. I really got an Indiana Jones sort of a feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's great, though. I think Indiana Jones is really popular, and nothing wrong that if it's geared one way or another toward boys or girls. And so I can appreciate that, too. Definitely geared more toward a male audience. I thought it was fast-paced. There's definitely action there and some danger and things. And so I think there's some really good lures for a young reader mm-hmm. in the book.
And I actually referred to the young hero as the anti-hero because some of the trouble that these two get into, they're enmeshed in some pretty nasty kinds of drug dealing and, you know, thievery type of exploits. So one of the things that, as a result of that, is because this boy doesn't have any training. It's not like he's an Indiana Jones or he's a, you know, ninja in disguise or anything. So he's in this situation with this uncle who's rather nefarious, and they have these unbelievable exploits. So when that kind of thing happens, and so again, this is told from the point of view of a 12-year-old boy, do you think that that's the unreliable narrator kind of approach to a story?
Yeah, I think so. And it seems to appeal to some and kind of turn some others off at the same time. And so I think kind of given the other mix of what the book entails, it could really suit a lot of young readers.
So, Callum, any of your books where people are doing things and you just find it unbelievable? Did you question that at all? Like, oh, that wouldn't really happen?
Kind of, in some books.
Do you have an example of any of that?
Like in The Twit, Mr. Twit, he said that Miss Twit was always shrinking, and so the only way to get her to grow was to do a stretch by tying her to the ground and then connecting a lot of balloons to her hands, and she would stretch. But as a trick, Mr. Twit cut the ropes connecting her feet to the ground, so she flew up into space.
So that doesn't seem very likely, does it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, like I mentioned, some of what's happening in this book is pretty dark, too. There is an antagonist, and he's actually a murderous drug dealer. So, you know, this book is directed at young readers, not young adults. So, again, parents, you know, have to be somewhat sensitive to some of these topics that are touched on in these books. I guess a problem I had, because I am a mother and a grandmother, was at the end when Tom, the main character, confesses to his parents the adventure he's just been on. And, I mean, this is a wild adventure. There's shootings and, you know, near drownings and this drug dealer, as I mentioned. And Mom's not angry. And so Mom says, "I'm just glad you're safe." Well, I don't know if I would have had that response. What do you think?
That seems really unlikely. It seemed a little weak. But I also liked the note you share, a good setup for perhaps more adventure to come. So it does seem to leave the door open. But I agree, the response does not seem to fit the story at all.
That a mother, that would be her response. So there is another book in this series that is coming out, and it's called The Sultan's Tigers. So in the first book, The Island of Thieves, I'm thinking that, one of the premises was that Tom did not have permission to go with this kind of criminal uncle on this adventure. And so maybe in the next book, Tom's mom and dad will be better informed, and the adventure might go a little bit differently, I suppose. So, Callum, as we were talking about this book, Island of Thieves, and I made the comment that I thought boys might like it more, but do you think there'd be girls who would like it?
Yeah, I think girls would like it.
Because girls like adventures too, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yep.
Well, everybody likes adventures, though.
Yes. So, like Katie said about Indiana Jones, did you think, oh, yeah, you like Indiana Jones movies, so this would be a good book if you like that kind of
thing?
Yeah. Okay. So another one of Katie's picks, which I loved, was Escape from Mr. Limoncello's Library by Chris Gravenstein. So how did you come across this one?
I love this one. I'm wondering, I think this is one that we even just saw on the shelf at Barnes & Noble, and the picture kind of jumped off the shelf at us on the cover of the book. And so I loved it. And then reading it, there is a really obvious, it seems, an inspiration by the author from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And so bearing that in mind while reading it, I thought it was a really fun book.
And I'm just going to let Callum correct me and you, because that's really not the name of the book, is it?
It's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, you're right. Thank you.
Yes, he corrected me earlier, so I just had to allow him to correct you, too.
Good.
And there's actually a sequel to that book, right?
Charlie and the Great Goss Elevator.
Thank you, Callum. So just to remind listeners, you're hearing us talk about books on Radio Book Club, and if you want to call in and join us, it's 745-8900. And if you've read any of these books, you can share your thoughts, or if you've got some other suggestions for young readers. So, as I mentioned, I really enjoyed this one too. I love this. I love the idea that there's a bunch of 12-year-olds who'd be so excited about a library in the Dewey Decimal System.
Yeah.
And as a librarian, I bet you were like, this is a great adventure.
It could happen. Yeah, it's great. I do love the premise. We hold youth evenings at the library throughout the year, and we do have this age group coming in, and so it's really fun to read kind of where the author took their night of adventure and kind of, you know, just reflect on what we do as well. And so I thought the whole setup and the idea was really fun.
And Grabenstein does a good job, I think, of diverse characters in this story.
Yeah, I liked it. At first, I thought it was a little simple. There seemed to be some very distinct character personalities come out. But I think it really helped in telling the story and getting some of the themes across. And so I thought he did a good job of kind of being fair to both male and female characters. And there's some really strong female people you can relate to, and then some males that have some characteristics you don't like. But I think all together it came together really well. And the main character, Kyle, I liked. He seemed like just a really good kid, and I liked his enthusiasm and how excited he was to be playing these games. And he did just seem to be a good team player.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, part of the setup of the story is Kyle has older brothers, so he's somewhat used to having to problem solve and connive and think about how can I win this game because my older brothers are stronger and smarter. And so that, I think, is a good premise then for his character as far as how he's able to go into the library and compete in this game.
It is, and it almost seems the game itself was almost a character in the book, too. Kyle is the main character, but the game kind of took on a whole other aspect of the story where even as a reader, you can't help but get caught up in it. There's clues for us, too. There's even a riddle for us to solve as the readers, and I believe in January they held a contest for all the readers who solved the riddle in the book, and so so the author had a lot of fun with his readers as well, and they were rewarded for solving his riddles throughout. So I thought it was all very clever,
and I think that's an indication of a smart writer, because as he was doing the story and he's revealing these different riddles, and then at the end when he says there's an additional riddle, did you solve it? I didn't solve
it. No, I didn't. I didn't, and several kids have since, so it's all over the internet now.
Well, we won't peek. Callum just started reading this book this morning because he had not been reading the ones that Katie and I were looking at, but so you started it. Did it grab your interest right away?
Yeah, it did.
So what about it? What did you like right away?
I liked how it has plenty of central characters. And I can't really think of anything else to say about it.
Well,
it has a nice story.
Mm-hmm. And I always get a kick out of Callum because when he's reading, one of the things he'll do is get everybody's attention, and he has to read some excerpt from the book. So, and I think you do that when you find something amusing.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so you've already found it entertaining in that way, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
One of the things I liked about this book, and I kind of like a lot about a lot of things, really, but it seemed to sneak some sort of trivia and good real literature sorts of information in there. So there are numerous titles and authors that are referenced in the book. And whether you know it or not, you're learning about the Dewey Decimal System that the library utilizes. So even though it's worked into a very fun, clever sort of story, you're still learning a very real set of skills and information from reading a piece of fiction. So I really liked that.
Yeah, and it's just so different, I guess, when from like Island of Thieves, because that's kind of a blood and guts kind of adventure story. And this one is, it's the adventure is solving riddles and having information and problem solving and creative thinking. So it really is, you know, it's like, yay, go geeks and nerds.
Yeah, it is. I liked it.
And just a couple other things that, when we looked at the characters or identifying some of the characters in the book, because I think at first, it's sort of like, well, let's have this character that represents this flat or, one-dimensional kind of side to someone. And then I think he developed some of those characters. So Sierra Russell was one of the girls in the story, and at first she's very quiet and a bookworm. But then later on, you get a little more background information on her. And, you know, this was a girl who was struggling because of some things happening in her family. So I think, you know, again, I think Grabenstein does a good job giving us some depth to these characters rather than, you know, seeing people as just one-dimensional.
I agree. I like that as well. I do like when you can get behind a facade and learn a little more. And Sierra was a great example, and Haley's mentioned as well. And she seems like the really kind of simple, popular girl. But she's actually conniving and uses a good strategy to use her skills. She seems very aware of how she is perceived, and so she uses it. And I thought that was very clever of her, too. And so it was fun, like you said, to just learn that there's much more behind the characters than how they're initially presented.
Mm-hmm. And again, a good lesson in the story is the, say, the bad guy, which is another one of the children who is pretty selfish, pretentious, entitled. So all of those things that we wouldn't like to see in a child, but that's this particular child's characteristics. And he kind of gets his comeuppance.
Yes.
Yeah. So being that kind of person doesn't have any rewards in this story.
Right. It doesn't. And that's one thing I liked about this book is as far as appropriateness goes, it's very safe. I think that's about the ugliest it gets is this person's entitlement and just a bit of a pious person. And so I liked that as well as far as being able to comfortably recommend it to parents and kids alike is knowing that it's really safe, good material there.
And I think that is something then that when parents – if they read along with their kids, if they read books with their children, that's a good conversation because sometime in life you're going to meet someone that you don't like and is, you know, a bully or mean. And so how do you respond? And what do you do? So,
yeah.
One of the other things in this book that I think is a part of the message is that, you know, to value friendship and being kind. And, you know, in the story, as some of the characters band together to solve the mysteries, that is the characteristics that brings them together. Mm-hmm. So, again, I think those are good messages for kids to get when they're reading stories.
I agree. And I do like there's just a kind of expected smarts of the group is, like, you had to solve this riddle. And I like that being expected of everybody, but of young kids, too, the message that you can use your smarts and your brain and books and things to solve problems, and they do. Mm-hmm. They do a great job.
And be kind and still win.
Right.
So it's about half past the hour, and I just want to do a station identification. You are listening to Radio Free Palmer, 89.5, and you are tuned in to Radio Book Club. I'm here with Katie Schweisthal and Callum Larson, and we're talking about young readers' books and young adults' books. Summer vacation has started, and most of us parents would like our children to be doing more reading. So we would hope that some of the books we're talking about sound interesting to those of you that are listening. And again, I invite anybody who is listening, and they've got some suggestions if you want to call in and recommend books that you've enjoyed, call at 745-8900. So, Callum, did you read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so you've read a little bit now of Mr. Limoncello's library, and you've heard us talking about it. What are some of the things you think might be similar between Charlie and this book?
Kids were specially chosen with the golden tickets to go into Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but for Mr. Limoncello's library, they had to write an essay to get into the library for a lock-in. And the kids in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory weren't really in a lock-in.
That's true. So in Mr. Limoncello's contest, that the children actually had to, again, be a little bit smart because they had to put some effort into writing an essay. With Charlie, he just needed to be lucky.
Yeah.
Not that he didn't deserve luck. That poor boy did. Anything that you can think of that's a difference so far in the two stories? Well, you said that they weren't locked in, but...
I can kind of think of one thing, but it's kind of similar yet different. In Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, they had a they had just one winner, and it was the kid that survived the longest in the factory without goofing off or doing anything wrong. But for Mr. Lemonshow's library, they had to escape from it.
Right, so again, Kyle in Mr. Limoncello's has to solve some problems, and then by teaming up with some of the other children, that actually helps him, which is impossible with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, huh? Yeah. But as you finish reading Mr. Limoncello, you'll find out that he's just as eccentric as Willy Wonka.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's part of the fun, because when Mr. Limoncello appears in the book, he's always dressed outrageously. He's excited about things like his birthday. And so he's kind of a fun, entertaining character, too.
Yep.
So of all those books you read there, Callum, which one was your favorite?
I didn't really have a favorite. All of them I liked, but one that stood out to me, it's a small book. It's called Ezio Trot. It's about this old man named Mr. Hoppy, and he loves his neighbor, Miss Silver, and Miss Silver really likes her tortoise, Alfie. And Miss Silver asked Mr. Hoppy, how to make Alfie grow, and Mr. Hoppy knows how to make a way to get her heart, and so he makes Alfie grow by using a whole bunch of tortoises. And every afternoon when Miss Silver goes away, he takes Alfie from the balcony because he's right above her, and he switches her out with one of the other tortoises that he has without her even knowing to make it look like that he's actually growing.
And I remember reading that book several years ago, and it's funny too, right?
It is.
Yeah, so that's another thing with Roald Dahl books. There's sometimes some pretty humorous stories. So, Katie, I also love this other pick of yours, Counting by Sevens by Holly Goldberg Sloan. So where did you come across that book?
That one I came across my desk, and I guess that's maybe how I'm just realizing how a lot of books jump out at me is the cover. Mm-hmm. So it kind of stood out. And then in reading into it, I guess I was just kind of touched how the story, there's a lot of tragedy that happens, but it still seems to be some sort of triumph for the main character because she's not brought down by all of it. And so I guess I found that idea touching, and I liked how it came together.
And the cover of the book shows one fish kind of different than all the other fish and swimming in the opposite direction from all those other fish, which I think you're kind of alluding to there, that the main character, Willow, is, you know, this one odd fish.
It is. Yes,
yes.
She is.
So, spoiler alert, the book is about Willow, who's 12 years old, and her parents are killed in an accident. And also, Willow was adopted. So this is a very heavy topic. And again, when parents, I think, help their children select books, if you're comfortable with your children reading these topics, I think it's only fair that parents engage their children in some kind of conversation about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did seem to get pretty heavy, and so I think that would be great. The book seems to be targeted toward a slightly older children's audience, so I would say upper middle school, maybe even more into high school. But yet there's a lot that can kind of bum you out, and so I think it would be something great to be able to talk about as you're reading and to keep in mind maybe Willow's spirit, where she perseveres.
Mm-hmm. And that certainly is part of the message. But again, I think when parents are concerned about, well, what are you reading? I think that's, if you're not going to read what your children are reading, just to have that conversation with them. You know, what's happening in your book and what's the story about? And then that gives children an opportunity to say, you know, this one has some pretty heavy topics in it because it's about a girl who loses her parents.
It is, and this was one of those stories where after reading it, the story kind of kept coming back to me in different ways because I felt a little differently in hindsight than when I had first started reading it. And I think that would be great for a conversation and between parents and kids as well, because I think if you allow it to gestate a bit after you read it, that some more will possibly come to you, and that would be worth discussing as well.
So one of my other notes on this book is it really is a redemption story, because there's several characters in the book that are troubled and are going through life having their own difficulties. And one of them is the counselor who Willow is referred to, not because of her parents' death, but because of some trouble she's having. Well, she's not having trouble in school. She's just so extremely bright that the teachers think that she's cheating. So she's referred to the counselor. And his name is Dell. And Dell quickly understands that she's a genius and is manipulating her to try to get information about stocks. So that's kind of a funny, you know, little a side story about how he's hoping to capitalize on her brilliance. But so part of the story is, though, that the redemption of Dell and the part he plays in her life.
Yeah, he seems to come around and make a better guy of himself, which is good. I was kind of wondering where he was headed at first, and so I'm glad he had maybe a change of heart and turned himself around a bit.
The other two characters that I noted needed some redemption was Quang Ha, which is a teenage boy and is part of the family that Willow goes to live with, and then Callum, how do you pronounce this? Because I think it's a Spanish name. Is it Jairo?
Jairo.
Jairo, thank you. So these two male characters also change and move in some positive way in the story. So, I just found it interesting that the hero of the book is Willow, a 12-year-old girl, and it seems that these three men all need to be redeemed somehow.
They do, and it's I found it also touching that this 12-year-old girl is able to positively impact the lives of those around her, whether it be an adult or someone her age, that she seems to have that presence about her to bring transformation. And so with these two young men as well, that just seems maybe it's part of her genius or just part of what makes her special, but I thought that was an interesting part as well.
And it's certainly not intentional on her part. I think that, you know, what is it about her, it certainly is her genius, but it's her authenticity. And I made a note here that she comes across as high-functioning Asperger's.
Yeah, that was an interesting note, because then looking back on it, it could go either way, and that would be a great hero for many of us, where we experience maybe different challenges or difficulties, and she perseveres over all of it, and I think she does a good job handling herself.
And not that that's ever stated in this book, which I think was kind of interesting, because I mean it may be or it may not be that part of the author's intention that she, you know, could be diagnosed that. But again, part of what we talked about with Aesop's Secret is, if a message in a book tells a child that being different or having, you know, these other experiences in your life, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah. I like the idea of being able to relate with a challenge or to a challenge in a character, and then in kind of witnessing their courage and their grace in a situation and how they persevere. And I think Willow is a good example of that.
So, Callum, as we've been talking about this book, and I know that you have not read it yet, but just hearing what we said about what the topic is about a 12-year-old girl whose parents die, what do you think? Do you think that is a book that you'd be interested in? Do you think somebody who's older should read that kind of book?
I think it's for more aimed at kids, for like kids that are like 12 or 13 in their preteen years. And that's it, pretty much.
Okay. So when you read a book and it's got a topic in there that you find is
disturbing.
Yeah, disturbing, good word. What do you do when that happens?
I just read it, and then later I try not to think about it because it just puts me in a depressing mood the rest of the day.
Okay. Do you think that it's something you could go and talk to an adult about? Like, this book had this topic in it?
I think I could to some trusted people.
Well, that's a good good way to put it. So, yeah. And again, I think that when children are reading, because we picked five books that I think children or young readers could go to any adult and say, this book has this topic in it, and have some conversation around it. So I think that's a good recommendation to anybody for any book. So again, please call in at 745-8900 if you have any comments about our topics, or if you want to suggest a book for children or young readers to look at this summer. So my least favorite book was another one of my picks, which is September Girls, which I got off the same list as Island of Thieves. And it is by Bennett Madison. And I guess I was trying to decide what about it I didn't like. First of all, if a young person is going to read it, this is one where parents would really want to know that there's a lot of mature content in here. There's language, there's pretty rampant drug use, there's sexual activity for young people. And so I think that, again, this is probably late teens. I don't know. Do you have any comments?
I would say, and getting into a little bit of the tone and there seemed to be kind of a lot of guy language, more mature guy mm-hmm. language, and so I would say older teens for that one as well.
And it's somewhat, I'll say, of a love story. So, but I really, it's told from the point of view of a 17-year-old boy, and again, I think there's a lot of popular young adult fiction out there that is something like a love story that goes along with some kind of adventure.
Yeah, that is something that's been really popular. It's kind of the impossible romance. And there's a real appeal with our older youth readers in it. And they seem to really like that angst. And so yeah, a teen love story, it's been going over really well.
So I guess trying to remember back to when I was a teenager, which is a stretch, but that the idea that, you know, this is somebody that I'll just never have in my life. So teens are drawn to that.
Right. Yeah. And there seems to be a real easy way to resonate with the impossible, whether if it's in someone's real life, if maybe they're not allowed to date or have certain restrictions put on it. And in this book, it's really taken to extremes. And mm-hmm. so I think there's some kind of fun that can be had with being able to relate to your own feelings of maybe some limits that have been put on.
So this book also has some magical elements. The girls, and they're referred to as that in the book, you're not really sure where they're from. They seem to come from the ocean, is what you get a sense of. Their mother is the deepness, and their father is something else. I'm not even remembering now. And so there's some story behind why they've been spit out onto the shores and, you know, what they have to do to make their way. And so part of a theme, I guess, in this book, though, is questioning what is beauty. Because one of the things that happens when the girls are spit out on the beach is they acquire some exterior. And they have learned that it's important for this exterior to be what would be considered by boys beautiful. So again, do you think, what's the message that's there?
Yeah, it always disappoints me a bit when beauty is left skin deep, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And so that is a point I'd like to challenge more. And maybe that would turn it more into adult material. I'm not really sure where the line lies on that, but I'm glad it's addressed, and I think it makes a good talking point then to what is beauty is in. And as you know, a teenage audience, can we think past that and challenge it? And so as simple as it seems, like it does make for a good conversation.
Right. And I think that, you know, I'm hoping that's what the author intended, was challenging the idea that, of course, if somebody was new to our species and they only got their ideas from television or from magazines, that they would assume that that's what beauty is, and because that's, of course, what our media projects so much. So it would be a good conversation for, you know, young people to have as far as what's a different definition and looking beyond skin deep. Mm-hmm. So the other thing that I think this book does is a little bit of what I consider some gender bending, because, of course, as when I was a teenage girl, I would read a lot of stories told from girls' points of view, and they're often love stories and, like you mentioned, the impossible lover kind of approach. And in this story, because it's told from a 17-year-old boy's point of view, the main character, Sam, is very concerned about being used by these girls. And then also he will check in with himself to see if he's attractive and, you know, how he may appeal to the girls.
I liked that. As a person growing up, it's something I never considered. And so I'm glad it's given voice in a novel like this, directed toward a younger audience. And so so I like knowing that maybe Sam's a little insecure as well, and he's struggling with a lot of the same issues that his female counterparts are. I think it kind of brings a sense of commonality and maybe making Sam more relatable to a larger female audience.
And also then, you know, giving that as a topic of conversation that, you know, maybe sometimes boys and girls have some similarity in that realm, you know, as far as how do we appeal or how are we attractive to somebody else.
Yeah.
Sam develops a relationship with one of the girls, and, you know, it is impossible. It's not going to last. It's a summer fling kind of experience. And so there's several messages in the book then about, you know, what is a healthy relationship? Because Sam's parents have a very odd relationship. You're not exposed to what you would call a healthy relationship in this book at all.
Yeah, and I think that would be great. And again, if parents were aware of what their kids were reading, that is a really great topic to explore, is what is a healthy relationship? It might not look the same from couple to couple. And I think that would be worth delving into and kind of knowing where you stand and where your kids stand and having that conversation. And so I like that. I think it's interesting because, like you said, we're not exposed to any good examples, really, mm-hmm. or a really functional example in this book. And for conversational purposes, I think that's okay. It can get you talking and bring up some really maybe important topics in your own life and chats to have with your parents as well.
So as I mentioned earlier, when Katie and I were looking for some books to read, we were trying to avoid, I guess, those dysphoric or apocalyptic kinds of books. But there are certainly a lot of them out there. Do you have any idea what draws young readers and young adult readers to
that?
You
know, we've asked a bit. And when we're at the counter at the library and you ask a young person, oh, what do you like about this book? We get, oh, it's good. Oh, good, okay. And so we have some kind of some sneaky digging to do, trying to get to the bottom of what the appeal is. And what I've seemed to gather is there seems to be kind of a mirror between what a character is experiencing in these sorts of books and what a teen would feel like in their own life. So maybe things feel really chaotic and kind of crazy. But then there's also this really kind of strictly controlled aspect of what your expectations could be at home or at school. And so kind of being torn between I guess kind of the givings of being a teenager, but then your expectations placed on you from home or school or wherever else you might spend your day. And we touched on it a little earlier, too, where there's really just normal, everyday people put in these really extraordinary situations. And so it's really fun to kind of read the hero's journey and see how they triumph. Sometimes it can maybe make your own conflicts appear to not be quite so difficult. The stakes are high. So I think that's really exciting. And all of this seems to also, I noticed it more, it seems, in the youth literature, but you're still left with a sense of hope. And so I like that, where the world's kind of falling apart around these main characters, but there is still a sense of hope. You're not left with gloom and doom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's appealing, I hope, to everybody, but to a young person as well, that you can still get the message. Yeah, things are crazy or difficult or there's a lot going on, but there is a way and you can overcome it. And so I'm wondering if it's a mix of those things that makes it appealing. And we've kicked ideas around with maybe it's just this kind of tone's turn right now.
Mm-hmm.
Things seem to kind of come and go in cycles, and this tone is really popular. And maybe it's just its turn. So we're kind of wondering, but from what we can gather in conversations we've had with our younger readers, is it there seems to be an appreciation for the common character put into a really extraordinary sort of situation.
Well, that's interesting. The other thing I was thinking about was that the research that I've looked at it just with young people and desensitization to, like, violence, because even some of the books we read, there are some violent topics in them. And with video games and movies and television, children are exposed to so much violent acts that they have to kind of amp up the action in order to maintain a child's interest and get their, you know, get their money, put it that way, their buying power. So and so I wonder, you know, if that's just a factor too. But I like how you think that maybe this is just cyclical. Maybe these kinds of stories are just kind of what's appealing to this cohort, and who knows, in 10 years it could be something else.
Yeah, I remember one of my personal favorite books is a dystopian novel. It's 1984 by George Orwell, and I remember reading it as a teenager and just being stunned, because my first reaction was, this could never happen. How silly, what a silly book. And then to step back and realize it really could happen. And I think it made me a different sort of citizen, where you're a little more interested and engaged to realize if you're not aware of what's going on around you, you can suddenly become a victim of what's going on around you. And so for me, it was a call to awareness, to understand and know what's going on around me, in the hopes that you wouldn't arrive at this really dystopian state. And so that was my reaction. And so sometime later now, I'm not sure if it hits the same way with our younger readers. But nonetheless, there seems to be a real draw to it. And so whether it's that or just kind of the really big kind of underdog story, I'm not sure. But this was a theme that really spoke to me as a teenager as well.
And I think that that's a valuable point, that if somebody can gain some insight from the story or in having conversations, well, what would we do then so that the world doesn't turn out this way kind of conversation?
Right.
Yeah. So I would think that some parents probably have some non-readers in their family. I know certainly I raised four daughters, and at certain times some of them were non-readers. You know, I have three grandsons. One is more of a reader than the others. So, you know, how do you get non-readers to read?
Yeah, you know, we're asked that quite a bit, and we're asked from age group of maybe a preschooler who just has no interest in books on up through parents who have high schoolers in their home and just wish they'd read something. And so kind of based on the age range, we give a different answer, but it seems across the board, it starts more so in late elementary school, kind of getting into middle school, where there's a general kind of loss in interest of pleasure reading. And we've found what works best for us in that group is nonfiction. There's so much nonfiction out there that is great, whether it's kind of a believe it or not, that's what a lot of our kind of that cross section, elementary school, middle school. It seems boys are the first group that become more disinterested in reading, and so the better our nonfiction selection, the more excited they are, and it seems the more hooked they are. So we really focus on our juvenile nonfiction selection, making sure that we always have something down there. And we have a program at the Palmer Library. It's a suggested purchase program where if we don't have what you're interested in, to please suggest that we buy it so we can have what you're interested in. And I guess some inside information that would be knowledgeable and really helpful to have would be, if you have some kids in that younger group, we'll almost bend over backwards to get kids what they want at the library and to kind of feed that hunger of wanting to read just anything. And so we want to know what they like, and we'll get it there. And so a lot of nonfiction works out really well for us. And just starting where they're at, some kids don't like to read because they can't read well. And when you get into school, I think that can be a really stressful and embarrassing situation, especially if you're expected to read aloud for class or as part of a project. And so if that's it, we have plenty of resources to help a parent assist their child in helping their reading level. And that's really the aim and goal of our summer reading program that we put on over the summer, is to prevent that summer slide that happens almost always with all students during the summertime. We enjoy a very long, lovely summer vacation, but unfortunately, a lot of the skills we acquired at school can be lost over the summer.
Right.
And so for kids, it's great. It offers incentives and prizes. But for parents, it offers one solution to encouraging literacy throughout the summer and helping kids hopefully improve on their skills rather than lose them.
Kellen, what do you think about the idea of kids who don't like to read reading nonfiction? Do you enjoy nonfiction?
Yeah, I enjoy it. I think it's interesting to learn about what happened in the past.
So you like to read history?
Yeah.
But I think the other book that Katie mentioned, I've seen you read too, like the Ripley's Believe It or Not. Or
yeah.
You really enjoy books that are about lists.
Facts.
Yeah. Gee whiz facts kind of thing. Yeah.
We got a series in just recently, and I love it. It's so interesting to me, so I keep telling everyone about it. But it's History's Worst Jobs, and it goes through the time periods of the Renaissance and the Golden Age and what the worst job imaginable could be for that time period. And they're really bad. You don't want those jobs, and they're so compelling. It's like, I never thought of these things. And we've got a whole shelf full of them, so they're really fun to flip through. And you can't help yourself. Like, if you're a non-reader or a reluctant reader, the information is so compelling, you really do need to read it.
And it's not something that you might feel compelled to finish. So, you know, for people who are non-readers, might pick it up and read several pages. But, you know, again, as long as you can hook them somehow.
Yeah, and I've appreciated that. I have a reader at home who's kind of in between stages, and to sit and read a full book sometimes is a bit much. So to be able to pick it up and put it down and still have some illustrations to look at is really a key for us. It keeps her interested, and she's not sick of it. So So we use that a lot, too.
Okay. Just quickly, do you think any reading's better than no reading?
I do. We've had that conversation because sometimes you could fill your library with information that maybe isn't very fruitful. Mm-hmm. But I think in the interest, especially of kids, of just trying to set a hook and plant a seed of library.
Okay.
Yes, reading is great.
Yes. Okay. So I want to thank Katie and Callum for joining me today. I hope our listeners have some about books that they would like to enjoy this summer. Next month, Radio Book Club will be meeting a week early, so join me on June 18th at noon with my guests Talis Kohlberg, director of Matsu College, and Melissa Benke, local small-town advocate, as we discuss The Lost Continent, Travels in Small-Town America by Bill Bryson. After 10 years in England, Bryson returned to the land of his youth and drove almost 14,000 miles in search of a mythical small town called Almaghan, the kind of trim and sunny place where the films of his youth were set. Instead, his search led him to Anywhere USA, a look-alike strip of gas stations, motels, and hamburger outlets populated by look-alike people with a penchant for synthetic fibers. So we're going to be talking about small towns. And until then, this is Judy Getty on Radio Free Palmer. Thanks for listening.